Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to say a few brief remarks for the conference, to invite a few of my colleagues here as well to also give some of their impressions and highlights of the conference and to give us a bit of their wisdom as to where we ought to go next. Before we do that, though, I would like to, and then the other part is that since this is your conference, and as Kevin Thiessen mentioned, we would like to open up the floor so that you can have an opportunity to ask questions, more of a discussion in terms, rather than questions, more of a briefness of discussion points of what you think came out of the conference, where you would like to see the conference go in the future, and your suggestions and recommendations. However, before we get to that, I want to recognize today in our midst one of our alumni of MacDonald College, the Faculty of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences, a person who has supported our conference ever since the beginning, one of our strong donors to MacDonald, and that is Mrs. Erin Hogg, who is here with us. Erin has done something special for us this year in that when she heard that there was a student poster competition, she graciously and generously agreed to provide a small gift to the person who gave the best poster presentation. Carolyn Beck was responsible for the posters, and so Carolyn, I'll call you forward.
Thank you. This year was the first time that we had a poster competition. Undergraduates and graduate students participated. The theme was global food security and factors that would affect or research projects that had an impact on global food security. So after we had three people evaluated the posters and talked to the presenters, they were extremely good. It's unfortunate we only have one prize, and our winner this time around is Valerie Friesen from the School of Dietetics and Human Nutrition at the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences from McGill. And I'd like to invite her and Erin Hogg to come up and present the award.
Initiating this conference and for sustaining the momentum and we have been very, very attentive to the conclusions at the end of each year's conference. And we have benefited a lot from this, and my country today is proud to say that we are on the right track to redefine the focus of our economy, the focus of our development and peace. And we know that the GDP of Nigeria is not dependent upon oil as much as it is dependent upon food security. And it is clear that the world must honor the responsibility and the knowledge that without peace, there can be no development. But without food security, there can neither be peace nor development. And therefore, the significance of this conference can never really be overemphasized. And we are looking forward to your conclusions about what has become very clear to me and to the Nigerian people and the developing world about the necessity to provide rural infrastructure. The growing trend for urbanization, which is creating a whole lot of mass of young people that are drifting to the cities because they have got some education and therefore they are not likely to stay back and till the soil. There has to be a way in which there is modernization, provision of electricity and road infrastructure, as well as schools and water, so that people who are engaged in this activity will do it at the same time maintain their integrity and their dignity and respect as human beings. So that farmers should not be the people to be looked down at. The other equally important thing is there has to be a new farming. It's not every commerce duty. There must be a way in which people are educated in understanding what is improved seeding, what time is good for planting. We can no longer depend on old ancient ways of doing things. Now, these are some of the things that worry us, that concern us. And I come from a very rural community that is made up of peasant farmers. And each time I go back there, I see that they are lost. They are young people. They are children who are educated, do not want to do what they are doing. And their parents who are providing the bulk of the food that is feeding people in the urban area do not have the respect they deserve to have because their life is still nasty and brutish. What can this conference recommend for the world? To turn its attention to infrastructure and to training so that we have a better command, a new critical mass of people, the over 500 million farmers that are feeding 2 billion people in the world that are at risk. Thank you.
Thank you very much, His Excellency. Always, as I said, I can count on Ambassador Hager to find the right words at the right moment, and he's always in touch with me to find out how our Global Food Security Institute is doing and how he, as an ambassador, can help us in any way. So once again, Ambassador, thank you all the time for all the support that you constantly provide to us. Now, before I call on my other four colleagues who are here with us, I thought I would take some of the highlights of this year's conference. I don't proclaim to have captured everything in these 14 or 15 slides, but we will be producing a final report on the conference, and as we do at every conference, that final report will be posted on our website, hopefully sooner rather than later. And all of the presentations from the conference will also be posted on the website. And Kim is going to send you an email when these are available so that you can get all the presentations and the discussions and the wrap-up. We had a keynote address, as you might recall, first from a public lecture by David Morley, who spoke in a very passionate way and compassionate way as well about the problems in the Horn of Africa and the situation with respect to wars, refugees, that make the food crisis worse, but also a call for all of the room to contribute to achievement solutions. And as he did point out in his public lecture, a crisis very much rooted in drought, but also in terms of turmoil, civil strife, and also the need for us to think about how we're going to address resilient agricultural systems and the good work that UNICEF has been doing to help to alleviate some of the crises, not just in the Horn of Africa, but in other parts of the world. And as he did say as well, it's not all doom and gloom, as we heard earlier from our colleague from South Africa as well, that UNICEF has noticed some positive changes that are helping to alleviate the problem. David McInnes from CAPI yesterday followed from Minister Oda's speech. I dare not try to summarize any minister's speech. I leave that to her two colleagues from CETA to do that much more eloquently than I can do in fear that I get myself in trouble with the minister. So we will have her verbatim on record. So Nikita, please, when you go back, if you can send us a copy of the minister's emails, a copy of the minister's speech, we would like to post that on the website. David McInnes talked about the need for a very dynamic agri-food sector. He presented a whole system approach, a new vision that CAPI has worked on in its strategic plan over the past few months, which encourages collaboration with the non-food players, such as the governments, the scientists, entrepreneurs, the financial solutions, and also to take this holistic approach that embraces the environment and health, the need to look at value chains, and also these common objectives that meet consumer needs and societal expectations. And so there's this common focus on a food system that is built around a healthy population, a reliable supply of food, but also responsibly produced food. And I have to say that being on the CAPI board myself, I think it's a breath of fresh air to see that kind of vision coming forward from CAPI. In terms of our sessions, and I said I in no way intend to capture everything that's been said here, just the key points that came to me. In terms of food security, natural resources, fertilizer is vital to ensuring food security, but there are issues with respect to fertilizer that is being improperly applied, that's being lost. This results in not only in economic waste, but also has negative environmental implications. And we saw the relationship between fertilizer prices and also energy, since fertilizers are produced from the energy sector, a need to develop new fertilizer technology, which is more efficient, more economical, to accurately deliver micro as well as macro nutrients. And the work that's going on, for example, in micro-dosing, proper placement of fertilizers, and trying to have a better mapping and relationship between plant requirements, soil status, and also fertilizer applications. The long-term ability to feed the world's growing population will increasingly depend on an ever-shrinking land base, increased competition for limited water resources. We saw an excellent example from Alberta by Brent Patterson yesterday, and I've always said to my colleagues in the National Commission on Irrigation and Drainage and the Canadian Water Resources Association that the success story of Alberta is one that few countries can tell. And we ought, as Canadians, to be extremely proud of what Brent and his colleagues and working with the farmers of Alberta have been able to achieve through efficiency of water use and the very dramatic graph that he showed with respect to barley production, how water applications, on-farm water applications, have decreased from some over 900 millimeters per year to about just over 300 millimeters per year. Barley production gone up to over 6 tons per hectare and expected to increase to over 11 tons per hectare in a few years. And I think that graph that Brent showed is a very telling story that when we talk about the need to look for positive examples, certainly the one that Brent presented yesterday, I think, as I said, as Canadians, it's a success story which ought to be replicated in other parts of the world. Rising energy costs costs of production up, and transportation pushes some costs. They also divert land to biofuel production. However, as Mark Rosegrant pointed out, there are some opportunities with this in terms of how we can use energy savings and proper energy management with respect to other practices such as conservation tillage, less energy wastage methods of irrigation such as drip irrigation and the low pressure drop tube center pivot systems that Brent Patterson also mentioned. Foreign direct investment in developing countries can benefit all stakeholders if the principles for responsible investment respect the rights, the livelihoods, and the resources of the populations. However, this has to be done in a regulatory framework. There may not be one common regulatory framework for the world, but certainly on a country-by-country basis, this needs to be developed. In terms of food safety, trade, and international markets, we recognize that trade is part of the solution to food security, but some parts of the world are not connected to the markets. The proportion of world agricultural production that is traded is increasing. More of it is in value-added form, and more trade is between private firms. And so this is some changes that we're seeing in terms of trade. Food safety issues very much on the agenda today, very hot on the agenda, has impacts on food trade and markets and the need to look for new technologies, new tools, and traceability to be able to ensure product safety, use of good agricultural practices, which is now being implemented in many countries. And the private industry is playing an increasingly important role in setting food safety standards. And so I think that is something that's important. I don't see any of our colleagues from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency here, but it is certainly something that I think governments have to think about, especially when we heard the presentation by Monsieur Ménard of the Quebec Ministry of International Relations today, that there are opportunities for other levels of government and the private sector to get involved in food security issue. In terms of price, food price volatility, global food supply is not catching up to demand, and therefore price volatility is likely to continue, at least in the short term. In low-income developing countries, price volatility lowers producer incentives to invest and may lead to higher food import bills. Local price volatility is higher than international volatility. I was interested to see the presentation yesterday of Professor Masters from Tufts. I thought he brought some new information to light, which I had not seen before. And this results from volatile production and a wide disparity between export and prices, which also has an effect on the market. The need to exploit opportunities for farmers through increased production and access to markets, manage risks through open strategies, and the need for more investment in agriculture to be yield some of the rice volatility issues. Undernutrition, huge problem even before food prices became volatile, as we saw from Professor Masters, and this was demonstrated particularly in Asia over the last 30 years, and suggests that gradual improvements in poverty rates in Africa are possible. We had a presentation of novelty yesterday from our students who I thought went to great lengths to put together a panel of grassroots action and challenges. I was pleased to see, as usual, the very strong participation of our students in the session. I hope that this will continue, and that some of the key points that came out of there is that civil society has a role to play in developing food policies, citizens bring values to decision-making about food policy programs, and food sovereignty can be distinguished from food security by its emphasis on the right of people to determine their own food and agriculture systems. In the session on public-private partnerships this morning, definitely I think we have come to appreciate in a much deeper way that public-private partnerships are definitely an important and essential part of the way forward. There are challenges in terms of honest and accurate assessments of economics, the contract management and oversight to ensure social benefits, innovative methods of Ukrainian entrepreneurs are required. We heard from Catherine Young from McKinsey that traditional types of training programs and learning are not the kinds of things that are going to lead to capturing these entrepreneurs in a more innovative way. And she talked about the end-to-end the mentoring training programs and so on, which I think was good to learn how the private sector, working together with governments and universities, can implement some of these. Eugene Terry talked about the need to map and remove barriers to production and how do we manage risks. And it was good to see from the presentations this morning, three presentations on public-private partnerships and very successful models or examples with respect to seed potato in Tanzania, vegetable production in Kenya, and the agro-processing and manufacturing example in Morocco, which I think provides some ideas and stimulus for going forward. And then in the last session this morning, in terms of conquering global hunger, was noted that biofuels can be a risk, a threat, or an opportunity. Food security is threatened in southern and eastern Africa and Guatemala. South Africa is an interesting case study in that it's food secure, and as Aidan pointed out, 30,000 large farmers feed the population of South Africa. But as he pointed out, in a very demonstrable way, as countries look towards land reform and so on, how do you ensure that you don't lose your gains in food security, but that you continue to maintain your food security? And so the political machinery around that, I think, is very important. Food production policies and programs need to be developed and targeted for specific farm sizes and demographics. And Dr. Ottenau from Guatemala pointed to the four types of demographics with respect to farms and farm holders. And I thought it was interesting how he gave those classifications from peasants up to the commercial farms and the range of policies that need to be implemented and targeted, directed towards each of these. Water scarcity and drought continue to be a dominant characteristic of food crisis. The need to continue to develop, improve irrigation, water management strategies in drought-prone areas, use of drought-tolerant crops, more rapid expansion of drought-tolerant crops is important. The food crisis has worsened by refugees, wars, and political instability, and we can't divorce food production and food security from some of these social political issues that only worsen the situation. We had a discussion also about the importance of post-harvest technologies, since in most countries, food losses over 40% occur due to improper storage, processing methods, and so on. And so a continued emphasis on trying to reduce post-harvest losses and introduce new post-harvest technologies is there's a definite link between poverty and access to food, as Dr. O'Neill pointed out in Guatemala. The whole question of access and access to food and ability to purchase food being very much linked to the food crisis. As we heard from His Excellency the Ambassador, a call to improve rural infrastructure in order to take food to markets, enhance distribution of farm inputs, and that investments in agriculture have multiplier effects in that they create jobs, they generate rural income, they provide better stability, socioeconomic stability in the rural areas where food is produced. But to always remember that while we do need food emergency, food assistance programs and so on, that cash transfers and emergency assistance are really not the long-term solution to food security. We need to address the issues through technology, through government policies, through institutional policies that can ensure long-term food security. And then the question that was, I think, raised by Aidan, and he referred to work being done by IFPRI, is there really some sort of a critical farm size in order to achieve national food security? We understand that at the local household level, people produce food through their kitchen gardens or through their farms in their backyards for local food security. But at some point when governments have to consider investments and they have to make very wise decisions about limited resources, what is that critical farm size so they get their biggest bang for their buck? And certainly it's a question that I think needs reflection on. So colleagues, those are, as I said, just my summaries. I know that there are other points that you will probably bring up and my panel here would like to address. And so I would first of all like to turn over to Judy Shaw from Syngenta, Canada. So Judy.
Well, thanks very much. Actually, I'd first like to say that Marco Froni would love to have been here, and he apologizes for not being here. He really enjoys this conference. He's been involved in it in a long time. I'm honored to be able to say a few words about this conference. I want to thank the organizers. It's an incredible conference from the day one on the Tuesday evening with David Morley speaking passionately about the need and identifying the need for food security. But all the way through, it's taking it from the global to the national to the household. And it's not just about those developing countries, developed countries, and least developed countries. So it's a very complex issue. And there were three things that I know I picked out of this conference that were important to me. And that was the first one is the sheer complexity of the threats and risks in food security. They're the emerging issues. They're the ones in the past. Some of them we've talked about for a number of years, and a lot of work is going on some of these things. But there's others that we haven't even identified yet. And whether it's the political side or whether it's even some of the newer emerging ones that are tied to land use in other countries by other countries. Which brings me to the second one, and that is the importance of dialogue. And this has to be emphasized, and that's why this conference is so incredibly necessary and much appreciated. It's that dialogue where you can share emerging issues, but also share accomplishments and what works. And so it's moving towards the future logically, because things never stay the same. They will always change. There will always be changing things, and they're always good things. So we do have to celebrate those things that are positive. The third thing is the importance of collaboration and partnerships. I think that is essential, and I think what came out of this meeting particularly was there's no one model of farmers at this conference. And it came up in my mind yesterday, and actually during the student panel, that I thought, whoa, sure would have been nice to have some real farmers commenting on what was being said here. A lot of us have opinions, but their opinion really counts. So that would have been very nice. So finally, I just would like to thank everybody for being here and allowing us to sponsor this, or sorry, the foundation. I'm not part of the foundation, but thanking the Syngenta Foundation for being able to sponsor this, and wish everybody a good trip home too.
It has been a real pleasure to be here as it was in the first one, and also to reflect a little bit on what's different now. For me, in reflecting on the event, I think there are a couple of interesting dimensions that all the presentations kind of fall in one way or the other. And one of those is between kind of optimism and pessimism, and different points in between. And I think there was a lot of optimistic stuff. I think the one that was the most optimistic was Will Masters with the sort of the larger changes. But I think Mark Rosegrant's one column on what the impact would be on food security if, in fact, things went well, I think also looked really optimistic. On the pessimistic side, I think that, to me, the most pessimistic one was the food safety and possibly the trade one. And the food safety one in particular, pessimistic about Codex and kind of winners and losers within that, and the maybe a more realistic appraisal of how, let's say, on the equity dimension, of how agreements around trade and agreements on safety standards would affect food security across all the countries. And on the trade side also, I think optimistic for some, but I think a more somber note maybe on that. But in any case, I think all of us, one way or another, came out in a mix on that. The other one, the other dimension that I found particularly interesting was between ideas that are new, what's going on and what's coming up, of which there is a lot, and others who emphasized more what constraints are, what we know has to happen, that is not being done fast enough or not in the right way, or as our Guatemalan colleague Montegrosso mentioned this morning, that they have lots and lots of projects, but they don't really know what works and why and this kind of thing. It's not so much new as it is ongoing and how we do that. So on the new side, really just a lot of very interesting things on, and Chandra mentioned a lot of those on food systems approach, on fertilizer, and straw for biofuel, and innovations in government, and so on. And on things that public-private and so on, plus on the what we need to do more of that we know how to do, really have to get out of it, I think, quite a few of the others. In terms of, I wouldn't say what was missing, but if we would have had more time, maybe another week or something. There are a number of things that I really wish we could have gone into a lot more detail. And starting with Tuesday night with Somalia. Somalia is a terrible tragedy, but at the same time, there is a lot of innovation in Somalia on how you do development within a crisis situation, and it is eclipsed, I think. And probably rightly so, by the scale of the tragedy. But in fact, there is a lot there that is new in how you combine safety net and development work in a way that reduces vulnerability, even in a complex situation like Somalia, and maybe particularly with Somalia, where you are kind of forced to do this kind of thing. And I know that David Morley introduced this a little bit, but that I thought would have been a really quite interesting talk if we could have continued on that. And of course, time just didn't allow it. Another real interesting one, I think, that we could have discussed a lot more that we didn't discuss very much, was the interaction between kind of the grassroots action and what governments do, or what intergovernmental organizations do, and so on, rather than, not that it was presented as a dichotomy, but there were really compartmentalized when really there is a lot more going on in that area that would have been really interesting to hear about. I know Modithi, for example, could have talked a lot more about CARI and its interaction with farmers, the same way with farmer-led seed systems, something that even the World Bank has been supporting for a long time, again, not enough of, and so on, informal seed systems, and so on, and how they, we have a lot of discussion on the public-private, but sort of the NGO-public, I think, is a topic that we could have explored more. Another one that we didn't touch on that I think might be good for another time is the public, or let's say the private sector participation in sustainability. What we had today was more private sector participation in kind of income and food security, but there is a lot of real innovative stuff on environmental sustainability in the private sector that I think we could touch on. And then finally, I think in the comments, both from the moderators and from the floor, an area that came up a lot that we didn't, I think, highlight enough was nutrition. And it wasn't, again, not as a criticism, but it's something that came up in a kind of a cross-cutting way, but that I think with more time, and probably a lot more time than we could ever take it, I think it would have been something that we could have explored more too. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to mention, Dan, last year the conference was quite heavily focused on nutrition. The food security issue is just so large. We've been trying each year to put bring a different theme on the table, but I certainly acknowledge what you say, and we will certainly call on our colleagues from the School of Human Nutrition to help us with this once again. I'd like to now call on Dr. Audia Barnett from ICA, Inter-American Institute for Cooperation and Agriculture. Dr. Barnett is the representative of ICA to Canada. ICA, as you're all aware, has also been a contributor, a participant in the conference since we started in 2008. And so, Audia, welcome again to McGill, and we invite you to say a few words.
Thank you, Dean. Members of the panel, Julie, Renaud, Daniel. When I sat there, I started crossing out because everything I wanted to say, right? And Dean said it all through the other Daniel. But for all this work, I just shared some of the things that stood out in my mind. I must commend you, Dean, for being able to galvanize such an august team in terms of the presenters, because I think we spanned and touched on so many different areas. I was really impressed to see that we had presentations from developed countries, developing countries. We have a member of the BRICS countries. We looked at national as well as provincial strategies. We looked at organizations such as FAO, IFPRI, you name it, CEDA. And I mean, you did it all. So I must commend you for being able to get all these actors in the same room. One area that, and I'm going to touch on probably about two or three points after I struck out the ones that that were covered already. One area that stood out in my mind is the fact that it seems that a lot of money is going into food security initiatives, both in terms of investment as well as in terms of development money. But irrespective of this, or in spite of this, we still have a major problem. And it underscores the fact that one size does not fit all. There's no silver bullet. There's so many issues to be considered, and so much. It's not a homogeneous solution. Even in one country, there are different aspects to be considered. So we have issues of trust. We have issues of access, infrastructure, policy, research and development, small farms. I think the Institute right here has enough work to do in terms of research for many years to come. And I think what we need to do is to identify some of the pressing, cross-cutting issues that could be addressed by the Institute. And I think the case of Guatemala and Ghana really helped to show that you can get out of the developing stage, they're not middle-income countries, but still have a food security challenge. Daniel said that we need another week to touch on some areas that he would have liked some more details, and I think probably we need another 2 weeks then, because I have a couple here. one was the fact that being in the Americas, and we have the Caribbean as a part of the Americas, I felt the small islands deserve some sort of scrutiny, which was not shown in the conference. And I guess if we had more time, we could look at the small islands that have specific vulnerabilities and sensitivities that may not be so evident in other countries as it relates to food security. There are some cross-cutting social issues that also need to be explored some more, such as the, and I think Dean, you mentioned that the public speakers spoke up some of the civil situations. But routine predator larceny is an issue that many small farmers face on a regular basis. So the whole impact of crime and violence on food security, natural disaster, separate and apart from climate change, you know, tend to increase or exacerbate the situation. There are other areas such as the whole issue of agricultural insurance and microfinancing that I think could have benefited from some more detailed discussions, but again would have had to have a lot more time. And the issue, when we hear about risks and threats to food security, the issue of the role of transgenics in some of the countries that are facing severe insecurity, that's another area that I think was touched on, but not in great detail. So I think all in all, we had an excellent few days. It certainly stimulated the thought process and set the stage for the Institute, I think, to really take some of these challenges and give it to some of these bright, energetic students I see around who really had some very interesting questions, but to delve a little bit deeper in terms of research projects. Thank you.
Summarize again any of these elements. I think you did a very good job in synthesizing. What I would like to try to do is to stress or to pick up a few elements that I did here during the past 2 days, or elements that I would like to that I would have liked to see emphasized a little bit more in some of the discussions. And I think that maybe the best way to start that is try to situate these wrap-up comments in the multiple dimension of food security. When we speak about food security, we always speak about the definition of food security dealing with availability, accessibility, and use of food. And I think what we've heard a lot over the past 2 days is a number of very good presentations dealing about more the availability element, discussing of how is it possible to try to improve food production, improve food availability through a number of different strategies or entry points. And I think those are capital. Those are very, very important elements. However, and you mentioned that already in your comments, Chandra, I think it's very important to remember that a large proportion of the food which is already produced for the moment is being wasted due to lack of efficient processing technologies. And I think that as we speak about food security, when we speak about food security on the short term, a lot could be accomplished and achieved by reducing the waste through better food processing or servicing technologies. A second element that I want to try to point is that technology is certainly an essential component of any initiative to increase short-term and long-term food production. However, I think that the lesson for the past 40 years have also shown that technology per se is insufficient to increase sustainably food production and to meet the need of the poorest. So, there was mentioned a few minutes ago that there is no silver bullet solution in terms of technology to increase food production. I think that I totally agree. I believe that technologies must be comprehended and addressed within a systemic approach that takes into consideration the complex food production system and the respective aspiration of the small-scale farmers. And I think it's very important in that context to emphasize the need to move beyond the silo of disciplinary research and to really try to marry natural and social sciences as essential component of a good and efficient approach to food security. A third element for me, which is quite important in terms of food availability, is I think that given the fact that the majority of food produced in the world is produced by small-scale producers, and in particular women, it is very important to focus on small-scale farmers and on the crops that are vital to them and that have been adapted to specific socio-ecological and agroecological contexts. And I think we had a very good presentation yesterday by USC, which also tried to show the importance of ensuring that projects which are aimed to increase food productivity do not preclude the capacity of small-scale farmers and vulnerable population to adapt to changing contexts. And I think that one essential element when we speak about food security for the most vulnerable resides in the options which are provided for small-scale farmers to adapt to changing contexts and to a diversity of food production and elements of a food security. Now, moving beyond the food availability, and it's been raised yesterday also by two presenters, it's been raised in a number of discussions today, is the recognition that in many regions of the world, food insecurity is not necessarily linked to an availability of food, but more to a question of accessibility. And I think it's essential as we think about food security to remember that this question of accessibility really is a central element of a strategy to reach the most vulnerable. And when we speak about that accessibility, we can think about accessibility challenges that may be linked to income-related problems, poverty issues, that may be related to access to production resources, whether you speak about land tenure, whether you speak about access to water, access to agricultural input, access to credit, which are essential elements of the food security strategy. And the last point is, and I would agree with Dr. Gustafsson about the importance of paying a central attention to the issue of nutrition. I think that food security is not only the question of having enough to eat, it's also the question of what are we eating. And I think that in many regions of the world, quality of food, malnutrition, is becoming a central problem, as much as undernutrition, and is having a major impact on the quality of life and the health of rural and urban. So although I know that all of those elements, which are making a very complex and very extended topic, cannot be covered in a single conference, I think those are elements that we need to keep in mind as we think about what are some of the challenges of food security and how can we actually try to address those elements of food security. Now, maybe just as a final way of closing these comments, I think that once again, I want to emphasize how much I enjoyed the discussion and the quality of the presentation during the past 2 days. I would probably also challenge, and this is a question that we've been discussing in the past, the organizer about how can we keep improving or moving forward in integrating and involving different type of actors in this conference. How can we go beyond some of the discussions of international organization academics to give more room to other voices, such as civil society, which was very strengthened this year and very much appreciated, but also trying to put a little bit more room into the gender and into the farmer voice, into the panels in reflection of the conference. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Renaud, and as usual, Renaud always brings much to the table. So, Renaud, your points, I think Dr. Barnett made them as well, well heard. Obviously, the need to broaden the dialogue and debate, the discussion, to bring other players to the table. And I know in terms of Judy mentioned, we need to hear from the farmers. We are going to do that. We're going to work with Judy on that because she has some good examples of where a farmer involvement, and we would like to do that. I'm also going to count on my colleagues in IDRC and CEDO to help us, and also our colleagues from Nigeria, Kenya, Guatemala, ICA, to help us to find for next year's conference some participants who can bring the gender issue to the table, the other social NGO issues to the table. So you can rest assured that you'll be getting emails from me on this, and I'm going to give you a good lead time so it's not in the last minute, so that we can get the visas and so on. Always a challenge, ladies and gentlemen. We always, as Kim Reid will say, we try early, we try to get as many people as possible, but there are always issues with visas and getting those visas on time. But nonetheless, we can't give up. We will work at it, and we will try to be as successful as possible. I think you've heard enough from me, and this is your conference. I would now like to turn the floor open to your inputs, your comments, your suggestions, those of you who didn't get a chance to speak before. Please, we have two microphones, and we open it up.
Hello, my name is Nandini Kumar. I'm a recent graduate from the Master's Program of International Development and Global Studies at the University of Ottawa. Once again, I'll repeat the gratitude to have organized a wonderful conference. This is my second conference that I've attended of the Global Food Security. The previous one was last year was more focused on a topic closer to my heart, which is water resource management and the links with food security. I won't talk about that right now. Actually, my comment is to add, in the spirit of adding future inspirational topics for future conferences, some of us have brought up the fact that it's interesting how in a global food security conference that the issue of global food consumption has not actually been raised, I think even once. Consumption patterns, consumption behaviors, and how the entire global economy and how the entire food security or food production system actually flows into one direction, where you end up creating the whole stuffed versus starved populations in parts of the world, and that dichotomy. And I would like to know if you have any personal comments on that, the panelists, or if you have thoughts about how to include that in future conferences.
On a personal basis, I would say that I totally agree with you. I think that if you want to speak about food security, I think that we all agree that there is a huge question of distribution of food, which is central to many of the problems I think that we're facing today. I think that there, although all of them are linked, I think that from an IDRC perspective, IDRC try to work on the developing country context, research and development context, so try to look at one equation of the problem. I think that different angle to food security, and I think that the conference has been trying to show how it's possible to look at food security from a production perspective, from a nutrition perspective, from an accessibility perspective, from a gender perspective. I think that the one that you're referring to in terms of global food consumption is another of the perspective that must be comprehended when we try to think about food security. What are the different varieties? I think that we could try to think about how to try to address that question in a future conference. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm in total agreement. And one One thing that we're benefiting from today that we didn't have, say, 10, 15 years ago, is access to almost real-time information. And I think having access to that information would make such a theme very useful for us to deliberate on. And I think Reynolds also spoke to the issue of food waste, and that is something else that would be linked in such a discussion. So I'm in total agreement.
Thank you. Other comments?
Hello, I'm Lee Brownhill. I'm working with Kari and the Yale Omni Food Security Project in Kenya. And I wanted to just echo or add weight to the different suggestions on bringing farmers, bringing women's perspectives, and also getting peasant people's perspectives, because there's so many innovative approaches coming from the grassroots. But also wanted to add and echo on the ambassador from Nigeria putting together some things that might not always be put together, like peace and food security, that without food, there really can't be, without food security, there can't be a peace in the society. Coming from the Kenyan situation, and seeing the overlay of the food crisis and the post-election violence crisis, it doesn't escape me as there's some correlation between hunger and the conflict, and I think that's going to be an emerging issue in the future that perhaps we should be paying attention to. And also that from the perspective of women's peace initiatives often revolving around food and exchange of food.
Thank you. Very good. Yes, sir, please.
I think it's going to come on.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. No, very tall man. Good evening. Good evening. I came in very late. I just came in today. Health Security is my name from Nigeria. I don't know if the conference has touched on the issue of energy and agriculture. And as far as I'm concerned, that is the major setback we have in the food production chain in most developing countries. Because the fact of the matter is that you can't talk about whose harvest processes without the energy to be able to do those processes. Common processing activities like milling, shelling, grating, and the rest of them that helps to preserve and to store the food. And where the energy is not available, as you have everywhere in the developing countries, it means you can't undertake this. Even the irrigation we're talking about, what provides energy for the pumps, no matter how small, whether small buildings or large buildings. So I think that if we must talk about interventions in food security, we must begin to think about this topic. It's indeed critical and topical. The issues of food security. And I think we should begin to think about that too in subsequent conferences. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We did have a presentation on energy. Mark Rosecrans was at the back there a few minutes ago. But we will be putting all of the presentations, as I said, on the website. And so you will see Mark's presentation, which was devoted exclusively to energy. But like, as we've said before, every one of these topics that we have spoken about could be a conference in itself. And since you've raised that point, and I know others have raised it as well from the panel a few minutes ago, one of the things that we want to do in the Global Food Security Institute with your support is to develop a lecture series. And so that the conference is only one event, but that we can have monthly a lecture series that can be devoted to one day on one topic. Again, may not be able to cover everything in a day or two, but at least we can take one subject and focus on that. So that's our goal, and as I said, we're going to count on you to help us develop that as we go forward. Yes, please.
This is my first time at the conference, but I was just thinking in terms of how innovative...
Sorry, I forgot to say, can anybody just, everyone that wants just to speak, just... introduce yourself so we know where.
My name is Malin, and just a question in terms of how to be innovative in getting certain voices across. Because I know a lot of conferences talking about bringing in farmers and bringing in women, and usually it's certain groups of women that will come, or certain groups of farmers that come, that they actually are usually the ones that go to international conferences, and the ones that are known. But you don't really go up to, like, northern, Kenya and Garissa and talk to the women out there and the pastoralists. But how can we use ICTs to actually have something more interactive? And I don't know if McGill's ever thought about this, but, you know, trying to get some of the ICTs that we've been using to maybe do something, whether it's sort of like interactive, how we have, you know, somebody giving a presentation or actually having it live. I don't know if you've ever considered something like that, but bringing in different voices so that it's more interactive from different parts of the world.
Yeah, a very good suggestion. We have thought about these things. This year, Marco Ferroni had to go to Mali, and so we had his presentation by video. But certainly, I don't know if Keith Andrews is here. He talked yesterday about webinars and webcasting this out on real time. We do have webcast versions that we keep on the website, but doing this on real time to other places, so that potential does exist. And certainly, yes, we would like to explore this a bit deeper and take your suggestion to heart. Thank you. Yes.
Hi, Nikita. On behalf of CIA, I just wanted to personally thank McGill again for a fantastic conference. Fourth year running, well done. Congratulations, McGill. Commend you, Dr. Reed, Measure Me too. You've really created an important brand here in Canada, right, around the Sandals Conference. And I'd really like to encourage the organizers to consider a much more action-oriented conference next year. Coming from a results-based bureaucracy, we'd like to have more of a moving beyond a review of the issues and suggestions of what can all the actors in this room do for global food security. Suggestions at the community level, academia, our development partners, and also donors. And just so you know that CETA is willing to listen. We come to these events willing to consider options and are ready to take information back. So move beyond, review the issues.
Thank you. Good point. Other points?
Hi, Chris Savari from Agriculture and Agri-Foods Canada. This is my first conference, and I really enjoyed it and learned a lot. So maybe the previous conferences have dealt or addressed this issue, but I would be interested in knowing on what your views are, any studies or comparisons on how biotechnology can play a role in all of our discussions on increasing productivity.
Well, that's a good question, but I think I can safely say that biotechnology has a very major role, a critical role to play in food security. When we look at all of the issues that have come up in the conference over the past 2 days, starting from the fertilizer issues, the talk about new fertilizer technologies, making use of nanotechnology, bioingredients, and so on, there is no doubt that biotechnology has an enormous role to play. One must never forget that in everything that has been done so far in the area of crop and livestock improvement, and particularly today, I have colleagues here from the Department of Animal Science at McGill who can get up and speak to this much more eloquently than I can, is that biotechnology has played a major role in development of new land races and use of molecular tools and new biotechnologies to bring new germplasm to market. You take many of the people talked about the CG centers. Many of the crop and livestock CG centers are using biotechnology, marker-assisted selection, to develop new crop varieties. Syngenta is doing this as well. People talked about, there are some people who raise the issue of food and food processing, food manufacturing, post-harvest. There's a tremendous amount of biotechnology that's going on with respect to functional foods, nutraceuticals, and biofortification. That's enzyme biotechnology that's revolved around the use of new biotechnology. So that is already being done. It's going, more of it is going to have to be done in the future when we think about the challenges that are on the table today. In the area of water shortages, water scarcity, we saw the maps about water shortages and not having enough water to be able to meet crop requirements. And again, the development of drought-resistant crops is very much a part of that solution. And not just drought-resistant crops, but plant architecture that makes better use of water, evapotranspiration functions, adaptive crop physiology to deal with water stress. Those depend on biotechnology. It's going to continue to depend on biotechnology, and there's no way out of it for the future. That's my view, but the floor is open for other views.
Sarah Dahl from U.S. of Canada. I just want to add some more ideas about bringing more voices, this issue of having more different stakeholders. And I just want to offer that certainly organizations such as ours and any participants here who work in partnership with universities, local NGOs, and farmers' organizations in the Global South can help identify people who can come and participate. I can guarantee you that the presentation I gave yesterday, if it had been given by one of our colleagues in Ethiopia, would have been 100 times better. And that's just recognizing that they're the ones who are really doing the work. The other thing about having farmers come and participate, I think they have a lot to say. It would add a lot. Even sometimes to have somebody from maybe an institutional perspective talk about an initiative and then have a farmer express how they have seen the same initiative. Often, it's different things will be learned from having that kind of dual perspective. So even having a team of people presenting on a specific topic. And the other thing I'd like to add is that from the experience of having brought both men and women farmers from our program sites to different venues, whether it's in the next town, the capital city of a country, or in a neighboring country or another continent, farmers get a lot out of that as well. They feel valued, and they often are keen to have the opportunity to learn about what food security issues or what other issues are happening in other parts of the world, in other parts of their countries. And they bring a lot of those learnings back to their own communities. And it also, I think, helps those kinds of opportunities help farmers and, you know, other people who are often marginalized in their own context have more sort of strength and more courage to engage more confidently in their societies, in their households. So I just really encourage you to you know, find ways of doing that.
I thank you. And as I said, we want to work with you on these things. We can't do it alone. And so we're counting on you to help us with that. We'll have one last comment before we break. Nobody wishes to say anything further. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, I don't know, Caroline, you could assist me, please, to have our colleagues who are outside join us. As you know, I claim no credit for the success of this conference. It is due entirely to our staff who are dedicated to this job to make it successful. You have been in touch with them. They've been in touch with you by email. First of all, I want to thank Kim Reaney, who's standing at the back of the room. Kim takes these conferences extremely seriously. She works, I get emails from her at 5 in the morning, at midnight, about different things on the conference. And Kim is one of the most dedicated people I've seen. And so she has really worked at this to ensure its success under some very difficult circumstances. I want to thank Eduardo as well from our faculty. Caroline Beck, who, as you have seen, played a very major role as well with the arrangements. And again, Sharon Campbell, I don't know if I've shown this. Sylvia Barucci, these are all just part of the many people. There's Sharon. But none of this could have been possible without, I feel I'm one of the luckiest people at McGill and perhaps any university, Murray, in that I have some of the most dedicated staff around that I can call on any time, and they give up their best, they give up their all, and I deeply appreciate how my colleagues, academic and administrative colleagues, support the work of the faculty. Ladies and gentlemen, again, this would not also be possible without the financial support of several individuals. I want to recognize again Aaron Hogg, several of our donors whose names appear on the board, the McDonald Stewart Foundation, Atoka Cranberries, Delta Pharma, Anita Jean Dunn, Robbie Greenback, Joy Harvey McLaren, for their financial support, as well as our financial sponsors, the Syngenta Foundation, who always stands behind us, IDRC, and the excellent relationship that we have worked in with Renaud, Kevin, Jean Lavelle, David Malone. We couldn't have asked for better support at any time, and we deeply appreciate the support of IDRC. The Quebec Ministry of International Relations, as you know, Monsieur Renard was here this morning, and the Quebec Department of Agriculture, MAPAC, who also provide us with financial support, and the Inter-American Institution for the Cooperation in Agriculture. These are just a few of the many people who assist to make the conference possible, and for this I'm deeply grateful. I also want to thank the providers of the facilities here and the financial support of McGill itself in helping to realize this program. And last but not least, I want to thank you, the participants and the speakers. You have done a great job. No conference can be successful unless it has a great program. It is the speakers and the participants who make the program outstanding. And so when you get up and you mentioned about the program, it is you, the speakers and the participants, who go out of your way above and beyond your normal duties. Do this, the chairs of all our sessions who give up their time so freely. I thank you all. And all that remains for me now is to wish you bon voyage, je vous souhaite très bon voyage, and to express our appreciation and to continue to look out for the emails from Kim about this year's conference when everything is posted on the web, and then for next year's conference as well. So, once again, thank you all. Best of luck.